Machete Mate recognizes the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and any indigenous elders of other communities who may be listening today. We stand in solidarity in their struggle towards the colonization and land back. Buenas, mi gente. What is good? We're back after, again, one of our typical short little unplanned hiatuses, if that's the word. But yeah, we're back at it with the current events, kind of a recap of a couple important things that have been going on lately. But we'll get into it. Again, if you support what we do and want to be putting out more constant, more frequent content that we would love to do, we need to be able to support ourselves, to be able to dedicate and be able, like I always say, be able to justify us dedicating more time to this. Please head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/machetemate. Any solidarity would be appreciated. If not, just, you know, spread the word and stuff like that, and leave us a review and a comment and whatever, wherever you listen to us, and just, you know, jiggle the algorithm and help us out. In saying that, I'm Leroy. Sorry, like I have something in my throat, so I'm going to be coughing half the time, be clearing my throat. So please excuse me. Like I was telling the fellas before we were recording, the weather here in Melbourne's been like really, really all over the place. So like I'm struggling right now. But on that note, I'm Leroy, coming to you from Melbourne, unceded Nomland, down in Australia. And with me, as always, T. What's good, T?
How's it going, y'all?
And today we actually have a special guest. someone that we haven't had on the show in some time. I'm glad to have him again. Is always good having him as a guest on the show. Our friend Austin, what's going on?
Love you too, Leroy. I know you missed me. I missed you, and I am very glad to be back.
Yeah, I don't know. It was weird. Like, you know, we have a special guest. You know, he's been on the show a couple times before.
Yeah, a few times,
and so he's a returning guest on the show. Welcome, Austin. It's so good for you to give us your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for penciling us in. Thank you, much appreciated. Anyway, on that note, to kick off our vibe checks, Austin, why don't you take the lead, because obviously you're the one that probably has to fill us in the most out of the three of us. What's been going on? How's life? How are things?
Absolutely. So I definitely earned that one. So thank both of you beautiful gentlemen for the warm welcome back. It genuinely is good to be back. I did take a hiatus for quite a while from both of my wonderful podcasts, not just this one, but also the pro wrestling podcast, Proletariat Lariat, that I do with a couple other homies. And yeah, it feels good to be back. I can't emphasize how important it is to take time to oneself when you need it, right? Yeah, self-care is super important, especially in this crazy dystopia world we're living in, which we'll be certainly dissecting and diving deep into here for the next hour or so. But if there's anything I would love to stress about, you know, where my vibes are at, right? My vibes are in a good place, and they're primarily in a good place because of the support I've received during my hiatus from everybody, right? From you, both you homies, right? From a lot of people, the outpouring of support has been, you know, humbling at times. And once again, I could never thank our wonderful Machete Matistas enough for the solidarity and support that they have shown. So I'm doing good. I'm in good spirits. And once again, very happy to be back. How about you, T? I'll pass it over to you.
Pretty well, you know, after, you know, this kind of like hopeful and like kind of like happy and optimistic when I come here with the fucking rain cloud, because like I got laid off not too long ago from my job. You know, it is what it is. So I'm doing that job search, which is very fun. Not really. But I actually got some prospects. Not all is lost. Been having very interesting experiences navigating some government offices that shall not be named. Suffice it to say, Virginia is a very stingy state with a intentionally decayed and kind of like fucked up like architecture for it. No hate on the civil servants and like the average workers who like work at these spots. You know, whatever it is, it's not their fault, obviously. They don't set the policies and stuff like that. They're just fucking getting their paychecks too. So, you know, no hate on them. But yeah, interesting experience. But no, I'm chill otherwise. You know, things are cool.
Listen, all you gotta do is wake up at 5 a.m. every morning. You gotta drink your brain tonic, set up your LLC, get a $10,000 loan, take those $10,000, invest it in a carrot farm, sell the carrot farm for whatever, blah, 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 blah. Grind set, baby. Let's go.
Oh, gosh. You know what? Honestly, that is a good point. This is a wonderful opportunity to really exercise my fucking grind set. To get fucking, you know, to have grind the power set, of mindset and, you know, just doing the Sigma Balls mentality. You know, kind of just the Ligma Balls mail. So yeah, wow, you know, and it's holiday season, so like people are ready to buy. So this is the time to sell. This is the time to get my fucking hustle on, your hustle on. We are fucking like going for it. All right, cut. That's our YouTube shorts clip. It'll come on eight and Joe Rogan.
I was about to say, what the fuck just happened?
Grind set, baby. Since he's been away, this podcast has taken a different turn. We're no longer.
This is not what I left.
Things have changed.
Capital, baby. Bootstraps. Let's go.
What about you, Leroy?
Nah. besides trying to do my own grind set, I think probably the opposite here. Like a lot of work. It's been really, really busy being in the shitty retail hospitality industry into Christmas and all that. So like, it's been ridiculous. We actually have Black Friday next Friday because, despite how much shit Australians like to talk about Americans, Australians just want to be America. Australians are Americanized Brits, effectively. And it's funny because my manager, she's English, and we were bonding over this about how funny Australians are like that. They always talk shit about like the English and the Americans, but if they could, they'd be English Americans. You know what I mean?
Fascinating.
But it is what it is. A lot of work. The little one's doing good. Getting big. He was pretty sick last week. So then the rest of the family's enjoying the latent effects of that now. But it is what it is. And the weather's been up and down. My plants are good. I harvested some potatoes last week. I planted 9 potatoes and got like 60 plus potatoes from that, which is pretty, pretty dope. Pretty excited. But other than that, man, like no real complaints besides just the grind. And I mean that in the proletariat sense, not in the LLC sense.
You're not doing mindset? No mindset? Like there's a different... No. Oh, because it's Australia, so it's different down there. Like it's like inverse or some shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's never going to get old. I'm sorry. I'm going to always make that terrible joke. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's just like how the new president of so-and-so is always Juan Guaido. Like, that'll never get old. That meme will never get old. Anyway, but yeah, everything is good. Just doing my thing. But I say we kick it off here. Obviously, there's a million things we could be talking about, especially since, you know, we've been away for a couple of weeks. But I think a good place to focus on, as we discuss, is I think the two places. I mean, I've been quite vocal about like my belief in these two places, that how these two places go is how the rest of the region goes. So we'll be focusing on everything that's going on in Colombia. So obviously, Petro's president won his election, has hit the ground running and implementing his vision for Colombia and for the region. And obviously, our boy Lula pulling it off in Brazil, which I think is a massive, massive win for the region. Whatever else you want to critique about, you know, I don't know, we'll get into it about, you know, the limitations of electoral politics and like bourgeois liberal democracy. This is a net positive for the region, right? Lula, like when the opposition is proud, like out and out, like reaction, this is a net positive. But we'll get into it. But yeah, like I said, the first round of the election was a lot closer. I think initial polls when we talked to Fern, because he was here before the first round of the election, it showed a pretty resounding lead for Lula. So it looked like he he had a good chance of pulling it off in the first round, and we discussed how imperative it was for him to do it in the first round. That way he wouldn't have to capitulate to, I guess, more moderate parties, more centrist parties, to be able to win and like enact his policies and, you know, win the election going forward. But didn't work out that way. Had to go to a second round, so which Lula came out on top. Barely, just. It wasn't as big of a mandate as we would have liked, but a win is a win. And me being the pessimist I am, being the cynical person I am, I'm happy for the win, but it's terrifying to know that even though Lula won, there's still 70 million, like about 70 million Brazilians who thought, yeah, fascism was fine. Like you know what I mean? But yeah, what are your some of your like initial thoughts after the victory?
Oh my goodness, where can I even begin if you guys don't mind me kicking us off here, I suppose, as far as the discussion aspect. Piggybacking off your last point there, Leroy, I agree, right? The margin was definitely a lot closer than anybody probably would have liked. But at the same time, I think it's hard to overstate just how much of a hammer blow this result is for the Latin American right wing, and not just that, like the global right wing, right? Like Bolsonaro was, I mean, this guy was being propped up as like the far right populist dude of like Latin America across the world. To see him go down to a coalition led by the PT and Lula da Silva, once again, that's a hammer blow to the global right, and specifically a really devastating blow to the Latin American right wing for a lot of different reasons. I think as far as Lula's victory, it's also hard to overstate how important that is for a lot of different reasons. I think, at least speaking for myself, I don't know what either of you think, but I've been in large part, I have been encouraged by a lot of Lula's post-election rhetoric, right? I think a lot of his post-election rhetoric has focused on two specific points, poverty and climate. Right.
Yep.
I think those are really good signs. I think those are really good early signs. In fact, I even saw an article in Bloomberg this week saying I think it was Bloomberg saying something like, oh, my God, Lula's talking so much about poverty. The markets are going down. Investors aren't as keen on Lula as they used to be. That's good news to me. Right. Like, yeah. the markets are angry at Lula. OK, ooh, thank God. Right. Because real quick, and I'll pass it over to you in a second here, T. Make no mistake about it. And I regret missing the episode we did with Fern, which was a good episode. Shout out to the homie Fern, obviously. This was a popular front coalition. Right. The PT ticket, that is Lula and Gerardo Alckmin. This was, for all intents and purposes, a popular front being led by at least what I would consider to be the center left. Right. Now, let's make no mistake about it. This is a popular front that includes elements of the Brazilian bourgeoisie. This is a popular front that includes elements of the Brazilian establishment. So there was always, I mean, there's still obviously a possibility that those elements within the PT governing coalition are going to attempt to pull this administration in a more right-wing direction, right? Or in a more, let me put it this way, a collaborationist direction, dare I say. So to see Lula already coming out very hard in favor of, no, we're going to tackle poverty in Brazil, we're reentering the international community. And my God, his rhetoric around the Amazon has been beautiful to see, right? And we'll talk a little bit later more about Petro and Maduro, right? But one could say Petro was kind of began leading the leading this discussion among the Latin American left. But even now you see Maduro talking more about the Amazon and climate than I ever have, right? Yeah. And it's because he's not stupid, right? He sees what Petro and Lula are doing, right? Which is saying, this is you want to protect the Amazon? Support the Latin American left. That's how you protect the Amazon, right? You want to protect our planet? Support Petro. Support Lula. Support these left-wing movements. Sorry, T, were going to say something earlier.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was just going to interject, honestly, that, you know, when the markets are mad, it's a good thing. And yeah, it's true. Only if you have the kind of economy that can push back when the markets decide to have a sad and decide to punish you. As we saw with Chile, which I absolutely guarantee that the, you know, the currency talk in Chile and the value of the currency was one of the direct leads to the defeats of the constitution vote some time ago. However, Brazil is not nothing. Brazil is a powerful country. It is a large market country. It is the largest market in South America. It is the, you know, it, does anybody remember the BRICS, right? Not going to happen. But it, you know, they're the kind of country that can resist when you know, the markets have a sad, but that's all I was going to interject in with.
Leroy, were you about to? Okay. Sorry. Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. Echoing a lot of their tea. And if I could expand a little bit more on some of the things I was saying, I think it's important. Like, I think back to a lot of what we were talking about during the Peruvian election, right? What was the consistent theme we drove home during the Peruvian election? The Congress will make sure that nothing is accomplished. Therefore, yeah, the Constitutional Assembly was the most important thing. Right now, obviously, very different situation in Brazil, but yet I go back to that theme of the Congress. Right, we got to be realistic here. Anybody who thinks that now that Lula's been elected, oh my God, they're going to be able to deliver on this extremely broad sweeping agenda, it's not going to be easy, right? Like, they, believe it or not, people in the United States, these countries have constitutions, and these constitutions have different branches of government, right? And people in these countries respect that. So it's important to recognize that he's still dealing with the Congress that literally in the last month he's been talking with leaders within the Senate and the House of Brazil, cobbling together a coalition. I know there's already talks of PSOL members wanting to split off and go into opposition. So that's, you know, it's who saw that one coming, right? So like, to me, it's important to once again keep all these things into perspective. With that said, there's two other big aspects of this I think that we should be discussing here. One, the reaction from the Bolsonaristas, right? Bolsonaro, of course, was reluctant to publicly concede, has still kind of been wishy-washy in his rhetoric or whatever, though there have already been talks as far as like presidential transition between Bolsonaro's administration and the incoming Lula administration. There were the trucker blockades, right? An interesting theme that we're seeing within the hemisphere these days, I feel. And it's I know there was a recent, there was even like a recent like court injunction. Courts in Brazil are beginning to target bank accounts of Bolsonaristas who have been like pushing like a coup d'etat sort of rhetoric. So that's of course something to be very mindful of. And on that point, I would also add, like, it's good, obviously, no shit, that Lula won the presidency, but Bolsonaro's party, the Liberal Party, they picked up some key governorships. They're still in the Congress. They're not gone, right? Like,
to me,
one of the biggest municipal elections that I know some people were talking about, or gubernatorial elections, I should say, was the governorship of Sao Paulo, which, granted, in more southern parts of Brazil, that's a more conservative place, et cetera, et cetera. But some people were optimistic that if Lula ran up the tally, maybe Haddad could get elected in Sao Paulo. That did not happen. The Bolsonarista candidate won. There's key Bolsonaristas still around, like this. Bolsonarismo, whatever fuck we want to call it, is not completely dead and gone.
No, 100%. And I think one thing that we need to remember, especially for our American audience, I guess our non-Latin American audience, is in the United States, here in Australia as well, all we know is, as much as we think that the political atmosphere is really shitting all over the place and it's chaos, it's relatively stable compared to the rest of the planet, particularly Latin America. So then when we see January 6th and, you know, everyone clutches their pearls, like, oh my God, can you believe this, and blah, blah, blah. That's just a regular Tuesday in Latin America, right? So when we see a lawfare coup against Lula happen, once they have their coup in 1964, once we see coups all over Latin America all the time, like, the possibility of that happening again is there. You know what I mean? Like, it's, we have to keep that in mind, that it's not necessarily going to be, I mean, it's a relative peaceful transition, but it's sort of tentative. You know what I mean? Like, the possibility that the people who actually want a coup won't actually carry one out, you know what I mean? I don't know that it will happen, but it's definitely there. That's something that we need to keep in mind, right? And it's, I think we're a bit jaded and we're a bit spoiled, having grown up in the United States, being here in Australia, living in, you know, the global north or whatever, that, like, transitions of power relatively peaceful, regardless of the rhetoric, regardless of like, oh, I don't know this and blah, 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 blah. So we still need to be mindful that these elements still exist. These very visceral, you know, very motivated groups of reaction or actually, you know, act. Because what are we seeing now in Bolivia again? I think in reaction to like Petro's victory, Lula's victory, you're starting to see those right-wing fascist gangs like, you know, rise up again and like beat people up and take over, you know, police stations and shit like that. And that's in direct reaction to what we're seeing. So those are things that we need to be paying attention to and things that definitely exist that we need to take into consideration that could happen. You know what I mean?
I tell you what, I think it's interesting to notice that one of the trends that seems to be happening in a lot of countries seems to be happening in Brazil too, where the urban vote seems to be kind of moving more and more towards the center left, right? We saw this with the reduction in Bolsonaro's support in both Sao Paulo and Rio. He had over 50% in both cities the first time around, and this time around it dropped significantly, under 50 in both cities. Meanwhile, you know, I'm reminded of warnings actually from Fern on our pre-election episode when he was mentioning how, you know, you go into some of the favelas and stuff, it's not the left organizing in there, it's, you know, the evangelical churches or it's NGOs or it's like, it's, and that those aren't, you know, these districts that, you know, were the backbone and in many places still are the backbone of, you know, left-wing organizing, socialist organizing, whether it's party politics or, you know, social movements and unions, they are less and less that. And we are seeing the kind of the similar trends where, you know, working class parties or parties that had been founded in working class politics, like the dynamic, you know, the urban rural divide becomes more and more pronounced. And we are seeing, you know, it's possible we're seeing this trend in Brazil with these this recent vote reflective of that.
Yeah, 100%. I just want to chime in there real quick that a lot of it has to do with U.S.-style prosperity gospel as well, which is why they're going into the favelas and like, you know, if you donate and blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure we're not getting into it, but I'm sure we're all familiar with like prosperity gospel. That has a big thing, a big role to play in all this as well, which is a shame, which is, you know, but it is what it is. And I think we need to be counteracting that as well. And like, again, as a non-believer, I suppose, like, religion has a place for everybody. Faith plays a role in people's lives, rightfully so. But we need to be able to separate that with actual material realities. You know what I mean? But I don't know, quickly, it's funny because Lula's wife is actively practices candomblé, which is like Brazilian Santeria, which I thought was cool. But
Right. It's one of the diaspora religions. Yeah. You know, it regardless of this kind of, you know, where the organization is happening, you know, for a lot of people, Brazil represents, or Lula, excuse me, represents the good old days for Brazil since, you know, the recent last few years of problems. And what's, you know, what struck me too is him coming straight out the gate, you know, seeking peace in Eastern Europe, right? He, you know, this is something that Lula has been kind of after since his first term, which is kind of like a big foreign policy win. So, yeah, he's talking about poverty, you know, he's talking about climate, which that's another conversation. Probably, you know, it's the, you know, getting out of the extractivist trap is the great critique of the electoral left wing governments of South America and the rest of the region.
I was going to continue some of the themes that you were putting down there. As far as Lula, for a lot of people, representing the good old days, so to speak, this is also something we mentioned in Bolivia, right? When Mas was attempting to beat back the coup government, right? At the end of the day, no matter what sort of bullshit right-wing spin the Brazilian writer Bolsonaro likes to make, Brazil was objectively at its height under Lula. That's just like the economy was booming. Like Brazil was taken seriously. You mentioned BRICS, right? You know, Brazil was taken seriously as an international actor. Unfortunately, as you just pointed in the chat, Leroy, that did result in Lula doing things like sending troops to Haiti, right? Trying to act like, oh, you see, I'm a policeman in the Americas or whatever the fuck. which that's once again deserves its whole podcast in and of itself. I think another important point on that note that I would mention is that I think two different things here, right? As far as like the incoming Lula administration, I think once again, because this was a popular front, like let's make no mistake, this was explicitly cobbled together as a popular front. This is a big test for liberal democracy, in my opinion, right? Obviously, we three are skeptics of liberal democracy? Would that be putting it generously, right? But if this fails and Bolsonaro just wins back power in 4 years, to me, popular front politics, collaboration with the bourgeoisie, so to speak, completely fucking delegitimized, right? Obviously, like I said, no shit to us three, right? But to anybody who tries to defend that sort of organizing, of which there are many, right? To me, this is a major test for liberal democracy, this incoming Lula administration. And I would follow that up with, to me, you know what's the biggest thing that the Brazilian left has to be asking itself right now? How the fuck was our bench so empty that we had to go to Lula again, right? That's a question you got to be asking yourself, right? To me, people should be thinking, well, how old is he? Is he 80 yet or just in his 70s, right? Like, I think he is in his 80s. I don't remember. Like, the fact that, like, Haddad, right, who did awful against Bolsonaro in a different year, different time, right, et cetera, like, you got to be thinking about the future, right? You got to be thinking about the bench, so to speak, right? Which is why it's disappointing to see Haddad mentioning him again go down in Sao Paulo. You got to be thinking about who stewards this movement forward. Because the fact of the matter is that the only reason this popular front was possible was because of Lula and because he represented the old days. I really don't, like, hesitate to say that if Lula wasn't there, I don't know that they would have won, right? Because yeah. Lula's an easy sell, right? Hey, look what the fuck I did last time, right? So, like, that's something people got to be thinking about as well, which obviously I know people are not trying to say nobody's ever thought of that before, but just an important point to raise.
Yeah, I want to go back a little bit and push back on something you said about Lula, this presidency, this administration being a, like, a sort of a referendum on liberal bourgeois like politics. I would argue that Chile and Boric and, you know, Peru as well, because those are popular fronts. They came to power and we're seeing how that's working out at the moment. You know what I mean? So for personally, I think that ship's, if it hasn't already sailed, it's sailing. And I think you make a great point about Lula and him being the face of this movement and him being the only possible candidate, because it's reminiscent of what happened with the, I guess, the progressive / left movement in the US. Like, Bernie Sanders is the face of it. After Bernie, who's up? Who's next? You know what I mean? And, like, I think we need to do a better job as, you know, people within our ideological arena at pushing, you know, forward. Because if you want to get all theory, all wonky about it, like, if we're talking about, if we're proper dialectical materialists, it's about churning forward and, you know, the passage of time moving forward and, you know, synthesizing contradiction or whatever. And we're not going to be able to do that with someone who's, you know, who's great. But after that, what's next? You know what I mean? And I think that is sort of an indictment of left movements globally, and us as quote unquote leftists need to reckon with that. We do a great job at talking about what's happening now in regard to what's already happened, but let's move forward with what's next. You know what I mean?
So I'm going to adjust my fedora here for a minute and kind of play contrarian for a minute. Here's the thing though. You're talking about, like, you know, a empty bench. Well, the only way you fill that bench is by taking part in the process. Is it not? Like, if you know, it's either written off or it's not. If we want to increase the bench, whatever country it is, you have to put people forward. You know, who's the face of the left in America after Bernie? Well, it's AOC, obvious, of course. But the of course that she is, there's a great gap between Sanders and AOC. But the main point is, you know, if you want a deeper bench, you gotta engage the process with all of its contradictions, with all of its compromises that people make, whether with themselves or with movements, with the, you know, really high highs you can get and the really low lows you can get. But the long and short of it, to get it, you know, to fill an empty bench, you got to get a deeper bench, and to get a deeper bench, you have to play the game.
Yeah, and go into the draft and draft good players. And
okay,
extending my metaphor too much. Let's stretch this motherfucker.
Yeah. Anyways, so oh my god, so we could talk about this forever. I'm gonna say a couple different things here before I segue us into, I guess, well, not segue us, but talk about something that will then segue us into the next thing here, which is you know, Leroy, I totally agree, right? Like, as far as like liberal democracy and popular front coalitions, and like just look at Chile or whatever. And God, Chile is like a whole conversation in and of itself. I got a lot of thoughts on Chile, right? I could just as easily say, oh, well, look at Colombia. It's working out over there, right? Like, it's, to me, I look at this specifically within the Brazilian context, right? I think if, because let's, I mean, I'd say the biggest, one of the biggest criticisms of the PT historically has been getting cozy with the Brazilian bourgeoisie, right? Or to like variants of that or whatever the fuck, right? And when I think about the bench, like, once again, I do look at Colombia. I do look at Chile to a certain extent, right? There were competitive processes in both of those countries of who's going to be the standard bearer, right? Will it be Petro or Francia? Will it be Boric or Hadwe? In Brazil, it was literally, we got Lula and let's hope to God he wins. Like, that's a problem, you know, like, and I think, like you said, Leroy, the U.S. is the best analogy here, right? As far as Bernie, maybe I'm like up my own ass or whatever. I'm very skeptical of AOC being the standard bearer after Bernie, to be quite honest, right? I think, yeah. And I know you did touch upon that too, right? There's like a gulf there or whatever. But I did want to say one hugely important to me as a unashamed Latin American integrationist, regionalist, Bolivarian, whatever the fuck you want to call it, right? Yeah. To me, the biggest aspect of Lula winning is just that. Lula's already said, you know what? We're going to bring, like, there's people talking about bringing UNASUR back, right? What do I always say is the most revealing thing about any right-wing government in Latin America when they take power? What's one of the first things they do when they take power? They shred regional integration treaties. Why the fuck would they do that? Like, there's literally no explanation aside from, the U.S. ambassador told us to. Like, how does leaving UNASUR and CELAC benefit Brazil? Like, seriously, like, how can you? It doesn't make any sense. Like, to me, if you were, and this is a perhaps controversial point that I make often, right? If you were a Brazilian nationalist, you would support Lula. Like, because Lula is the one saying, I'm going to make Brazil matter on the world stage. Whereas Bolsonaro is saying, I'm going to make sure Brazil does whatever the fuck the U.S. wants. Right? Like, come on, you know? So, like, there was even, interestingly enough, I think Maduro released a statement today saying that members of the Sao Paulo Forum were once again talking about a united Latin American currency, Latin American Caribbean currency. Damn, like, Lula's mentioned that, right? And like, once again, it comes down to just basic self-interest, right? Like, if people want to get cynical about, well, why would anybody do this? If you're Lula, if you're AMLO, a common Latin American currency is great for your country. Like, just objectively, like, I would argue, right? Where's the majority of capital going to be spent? Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, right? They would be the Germany in this example, right? If we're using the EU analogy, right? So no shit, they want that, right? For a country like Venezuela, hell yeah, they'd love to get rid of their currency and do a regional one, right? Like, it's a win-win across the board. And to see Brazil, which was isolating itself from all of these integration projects, was very sad to see. CELAC is going to have a big fucking year next year. A big fucking year. There's going to be a one-year period where literally for the first time in history, people, Brazil, Mexico, and Argentina, all left by left governments, right? And not just that, a whole smorgasbord of left governments across the region, right?
The thing is, like, I'm sure if you have more information on this, but I've never heard Lula's opinion on Puerto Rico and its, you know, its status and stuff. So it'd be really interesting talking about regional integration and Latin American,
oh yeah,
whatever. it's like, and I mean this in all honesty, like I'm curious to know what he thinks, if it's even a like a consideration that he has.
So I don't know if that's anything he's actually spoken on. One thing I do know is that the only Puerto Rican representatives of the Sao Paulo Forum are independentistas. So if he has like Puerto Rican, like literal allies, those are the ones. But once again, I don't know if it's anything he's spoken on specifically.
And the project is fundamentally impossible without Brazil. Like there is literally no regional integration that happens without Brazil, frankly. Mexico will not take the lead on it. Argentina will not take the lead on it. The kind of integration we're looking for, one that isn't dictated by Washington or by, you know, Mexico's own upper classes interests, is one, you know, that is honestly led by Brazil. It was the linchpin, the cornerstone.
Yeah, 100%. And I think going back to your analogy, Austin, it's almost as if like if Germany wouldn't take part in the EU, like the EU wouldn't happen. Like, you know what I mean? It's a similar thing like that. But yeah, so it's very, very interesting. We'll see what happens. It's early days. Hopefully it doesn't turn out to be a another disappointment resulting from a liberal bourgeois election, democracy, whatever. But speaking of which, we'll keep the ball rolling and we'll go over to Colombia, where things are pretty positive early on. Hopefully we can keep going. So obviously we're talking about Petro taking the presidency, enacting a lot of reforms, things like peace accords with some of the guerrilla movements, reintegration. I won't say reintegration, but like opening up of relations again with Venezuela, tightening of those ties as well, which is nothing but positive for the region and for like everything that we were about on this show. Austin, I know you have 1,000 thoughts on Colombia, as you usually do, so go ahead.
Oh, dude, were you the one that coined Arepa Accords, or did you steal that from somewhere else? You coined it? Okay, yeah, that's the best. It's perfect. Okay, so, oh my goodness, the Arepa Accords. What a historic moment. So, as should be...
Sorry, quickly. Just for context for our non-Arepa eating, you know, listeners. So, an Arepa is essentially like a cornmeal-based, like, little pancake thing that... it's quite popular. It's like Venezuela's national food, essentially. But Colombians also like it. And there's always like this little battle of who makes the best ones. So when they talk, we've called it the Arepa Accords, you know? But anyway.
And I must say, as a Puerto Rican, I am personally partial to Puerto Rican arepas. You South Americans can get fucked. Just kidding. No, what I was going to say was, oh my goodness. Okay, so a lot of different things here. The first thing that must be, and I'm sorry, our beautiful Machete Matistas, you've heard me, Leroy Ante, say what I'm about to say 1,000 times, but it has to be said at the onset of any Colombia story. This is Colombia, guys. Yeah. This is Colombia. This is like, oh my God. Like it's so hard to put that into perspective. Like, I'll use the analogy I always use. Like, imagine an out-and-out self-proclaimed socialist, right, was elected governor of Florida amidst a coalition that had literal communists in it and was not only winning but was widely popular and in ushering in like a fucking culture change. Like, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay, so that's – once again, that's just me being dramatic. Okay, so a lot of different things here. We just passed the first 100 days mark of Gustavo Petro's presidency, right? I think on the last episode we talked about Colombia where I was here. I said something at the time like, oh, it kind of bothers me when I hear this rhetoric of Petro being quote unquote Colombia's first leftist president. What the fuck does that even mean? Right. And I still kind of feel that way to a certain extent, but at the same time, holy shit. Right. Like after 100 days, he's hit the ground running, guys. Like, and that might even be a generous way of, or not even generous enough way of putting it, I guess. His approval rating has fluctuated, but has at times hit over 70%. Dudes, like, that's insane. Okay, so what is Petro doing? What's happening? Why is this insane? Well, I think one of the most important moments was in the very opening stages of his presidency. Do you both remember? It was either the first or second week. There were major shakeups in the military and the national police, right? That shit happened in like week one or two. you know? And like, I think that was critically important. What do we always say? You know, you got to make sure you have loyal military, right? And obviously I'm not saying, oh my God, the Colombian military was totally revolutionized. Not what I'm saying, right? I'm saying he's been taking bold measures like that. Right now, Petro, El Pacto, right? They've been pushing a policy known as Paz Total, total peace. That's what they're calling it, total peace. What does that mean? The Colombian Senate and the Colombian House have already passed this, the Paz Total, right? Which gives the government, gives the presidency the power to negotiate peace among all the armed groups, right? That's amazing, right? Oh my God, like this is some historic shit, right? Colombia has essentially been in a state of civil war since the 1950s, right? And like we now have an administration and with a mandate actually delivering on peace, paz total, right? Total peace. Talks with the ELN have been reopened, the National Liberation Army, which was the largest currently active of the guerrilla movements, right? The ELN has reopened peace talks. I would remind people, it was peace talks with the ELN, interestingly enough. It was, interestingly enough, talks with the ELN, which were held in Cuba, that led to the United States. This is one of the most cynical things the Trump administration did. Peace talks with the ELN in Cuba were what led the Trump administration to declare the Cuban government a sponsor of state terror. That's insane, right? It's amazing to me that people don't talk about that more often. But peace talks with the ELN have been reopened, which were notoriously cut off by the Duque administration, which was right-wing hawk, right, the previous administration. Petro has approached the Gulf clan, the Gaitanistas, the far-right paramilitaries. He's arrested dozens of them. A bunch of their camps have been cracked down on. And not just that, there's two groups in particular that seem to be getting targeted as far as like for like I would say arrests. The Gulf clan and the FARC dissidents, right? These are people that are known, and it's alleged that these people may engage in illicit activities. I'll put it that way, right?
alleged, right?
Yes. As far as groups like ELN or Segunda Marquetalia, right? The other FARC, remobilized FARC. These people are engaging in full peace talks with Colombia. But crucially, these talks are also being held in Venezuela. Guys, obviously we know everything, but like when Petro visited Venezuela earlier this month, or was it last month? Historic, right? The president of Colombia going to Caracas to meet the president of Venezuela, something that has not happened since 2018 when ties were cut off and Guaido was recognized, right? A lot of important shit came out of that meeting that I don't see people discussing enough to my liking, right? Oh my God. The fact that Colombia and Venezuela have now restored diplomatic ties following that meeting, they've reopened the border. Just last week, plane travel was officially, or air travel, I should say, was officially renewed between Colombia and Venezuela. That's incredible, right? Venezuelan diaspora are now starting to be able to come back home to Venezuela, right? It was remarkable to me after this meeting. Petro said that he approached Maduro with two major proposals, right? Venezuela re-entering the Andean community, right? That is the regional trade bloc that includes Peru up north through Ecuador, Colombia, and Venezuela and Bolivia, although Venezuela is not a member, right, but might rejoining. And Petro asked Maduro to rejoin the Inter-American Court on Human Rights, right? Wow, I have so many thoughts about this. Leroy, you're about to say something. I'm about to go on like 30-minute rant just on that alone.
It was pretty random. But when you were talking about like how significant it was that Petro was going to Caracas to have these meetings, I think about, imagine like the president of an independent Puerto Rico going to Havana for meetings.
Yes.
Like, you know, honestly, what I mean? Yes. Like,
yes, that's not far off.
When I saw it, I was like, oh, this is like a president of Puerto Rico going to Havana for meetings. And just like nothing goes, yep. And I think... And if I'm not mistaken, like, I think Petro, if you want to argue about, like, you know, trying to curry favor with his domestic, you know, base or whatever, domestic policy, if I'm not mistaken, like, he's played this well where he hasn't come out and like, yeah, I support the Bolivarian Revolution, blah, 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 blah. But he's like, hey, I mean, let's just have talks. Let's just chat. What's wrong with chatting? What's wrong with having a chat? You know what I mean? So basically recognizing the importance of having these relations without, I guess, upsetting, you know, the more pearl-clutching base, like, demographics of his country. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, positioning yourself as a pacifist in a way, positioning yourself as someone who is literally just I am seeking peace. I want to resolve all conflicts, brings a lot of benefits. You know, you can more credibly play the balancing game, the political game. You have a lot more room to do so if you're non-committal on the lines are drawn. If you can position, you know, in many ways it's Obama, but for real. You know, Obama 08, but for real, like, you know what I mean? Like, try actually going to come in and try to dissolve like the old rivalries and boundaries. Now, and I'll kick it over to you, Leroy, in just a moment. That I think the problem, though, is that, you know, it also it's a double-edged sword, because sometimes lines are necessary. Fortunately, Colombia hasn't got to that point where they have to take a definitive line here or there or feel required to. So, you know, they're able to play the peacemaker role.
Yeah, and this is going to be a really deep cut, but it's like when Jesse the Body Ventura went to meet Fidel Castro, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's a communist, he's a dictator. Why would you do that?" And he's like, "Well, okay. Let me go talk. Let me find out for myself." And he went, and you know what I mean? It's like that. Like, why not? If you go there and he's a dickhead and the policies are shit and Cuba's falling apart, or Venezuela's falling apart, fine. Let's go have a look. You know what I mean?
Dudes, absolutely. Great points here, right? And I would say, to me, Petro's approach to Venezuela is in deep contrast to Gabriel Boric in Chile, right? It's so obvious what Boric is doing, right? Oh, let me show that I'm going to tackle the Venezuela question, and oh, well, I'm in a right-wing country, I gotta act tough. Come on, man. Like, to me, that's unserious, right? I'm going to solve the Venezuela crisis by treating them like a pariah. Unserious, right? Petro can look any Colombian in the eyes and say, you want, hey, rich Colombians, you want the kidnappings to stop? Hey, poor Colombians, you want the killings to stop? I'm going to stop them. Right? Paz total, total peace. And that means opening discussions, direct talks with Caracas. Nobody can dispute that, right? And also another critically important point, I mentioned the airlines, right? You know what, to me, was one of the most important aspects of that story of the Colombian plane going from Bogota to Caracas? Petro, on the after it was announced, you know what Petro said? He said, I'm paraphrasing here, he said, "This flight was done on a Colombian airline because I promised that I'm going to strengthen the Colombian economy, and this Colombian airline is going to become one of the big ones," right? I go back to what I said about Brazil. If you're a Colombian nationalist, you would support Petro, right? Like, if you're like, you, it just on a basic level, right? Because to me, being right wing in Latin America means listening to whatever the United States tells you. The opposite of being a quote unquote nationalist for your country, right? And once again, that's, you know, complicated, divisive rhetoric, et cetera, et cetera. But once again, I think that was an important part of that story. I think there's so many different other important aspects to bring up here. I would be remiss without pointing out. So Petro said to Maduro, "You should rejoin the Andean community," right? Which once again is one of the trading blocks within the Western part of South America. Let's remind ourselves, when did Venezuela leave the Andean community? Not under Maduro. Under Chavez. They left the Andean community in 2006, right? Maduro came out publicly after this meeting and said, "Yeah, we're gonna consider rejoining," right? This would be Maduro undoing something that Chavez did, right? That's bold, right? And to me, that's If I was Maduro, if I, you know, I'm personal friends. Okay, I'm not going to go that far, right? CIA, let's relax, right?
Slow down, Ross.
I may or may not have, you know, fist bumped him at one point. But here's the thing. Subscribe to the Patreon if you want to hear that story. But anyways, so like what I was about to say was if I was Maduro, dude, to me the biggest – like I'm going to try and tie this all together here, right? Which is – when I see the Arepa Accords, right, like Colombia and Venezuela renewing ties, right, Venezuela hosting talks between the ELN and Colombia. And oh my goodness. Also, one last thing regarding Venezuela hosting talks. You know what I think was also a very interesting story that came out the last couple of weeks? That Venezuela has ramped up its effort to crack down on illegal mining. I don't think that's a coincidence, guys. Right? Like a lot of the illegal gold mining in southern Venezuela, a lot of those camps are getting torn apart right now. I don't think that's a coincidence, right? It's because Venezuela, like Maduro, now sees the opportunity of, oh shit, this is the golden window to like get out of being fucking isolated and sabotaged by, you know, the North Europe, whatever we want to call it, right? I think if I was Maduro, right, I would 100% be applying to rejoin the Andean community. And I would here's the deal that I would cut. Here's the deal that I would try and cut. When Lula's in office, you know damn well that Brazil's going to rejoin SELAC. And when that happens, once again, next year is going to be a big year for SELAC. And reminder, SELAC is the community of Latin American and Caribbean states. It's the regional organization that has every country except for the United States and Canada, right? It's the Latin American unity dream. I think there's going to be a huge opportunity for Maduro to say to SELAC, hey, presidential elections in Venezuela in either 2024 or 2025, whichever year they describe, monitored by SELAC. And you guys, we all restore relations with each other and recognize whoever wins that election as the president of Venezuela, right? And I understand the hesitancy, right? I understand the hesitancy. But even another big aspect of this. Did you see our boy, our favorite named politician in Venezuela, Stalin Gonzalez, one of Juan Guaido's right-hand men, one of Juan Guaido's longtime right-hand men? You know what our boy Stalin came out and said recently?
Yeah.
He recently came out and said, no, we should be renewing talks with Maduro. The opposition should be renewing these talks, right? Against what Guaido and a lot of the far right of the opposition have been saying. Because even they see the writing on the wall, right? Which is, we've got to stop this, right? We like, because once again, I go back to that simple fact. If you're just a basic Venezuelan, you see what Guaido and the opposition have done to the country in the last couple of years, and it's indefensible. It makes them look like shit, right? If I'm Stalin Gonzalez in the opposition, I take that same deal. I say SELAC monitored elections in 2025 or 2024, and we all agree whoever the fuck gets elected. And scorching hot take. I think that the Lula question, as I mentioned, as far as the deep bench or whatever, also applies in Venezuela, right? Venezuela, PSUV, they have a deep bench, man. They have people like Hector Rodriguez, right? They have people like Luis Jose Marcano, like Delcy Rodriguez, right? There's a lot of good up-and-comers in Venezuela that I know would be great presidential candidates. But that's, once again, maybe a spicy conversation for another day. Go ahead, Leroy.
Now, I was going to say, and to your point, I think for Maduro, this would be the time to do it because I think he hasn't seen his position so strong as it is now, particularly with like the what's going on with global oil and everything. And like even the North, like softening of the stances on, you know, on Venezuela as well. It's that whole thing, like make your biggest haters, your biggest customers. You know what I mean? So I think now he's in a position where he's at his strongest, you know? So I think to your point, I think that's going back to our previous conversation that we just had about Brazil and about like who's up next. I think this is a way of consolidating that and be like, and having that election, and especially if one of the Bolivarians wins, it's basically saying like, look, the revolution is popular. This is a popular revolution. We have support, and you know, this is what we're doing. But I want to go back before I want to actually ask you, because I had no idea that it was Chavez that pulled Venezuela out of the Andean community. Do you know, is there a reason why that happened? Like, what was going on? Like, I didn't know this. Like, what was the reason behind that?
Oh man, I forget. All I know is that it happened in 2006, right? Which implies to me this probably happened around the time when Alba was emerging as kind of like the what they were promoting as like an alternative. I wouldn't be surprised if this had the, it was the dual effect of, hey, fuck you guys, we're doing our own thing. Very noble goal in its own right. And also, I might be wrong with my my dates here. I think this might have been the time when Chavez was really at war with the media as well. So I think this was when the beginnings of like right-wing Latin America was like, how dare you shut down RCTV, you fucking dictator, right? Or whatever. I don't know. Don't quote me there, right? Because it was 2006. That's all I know. It was 2006 when they left the Andean community. But absolutely. Great points there, Leroy. And a lot of different, once again, a lot of different things I'd love us to probe here. A lot of different things. Once again, next year is going to be a critically important year for SELAC because there are going to be two critically important presidential elections next year for Latin America. One of them being Argentina in October. And I know the Cristina Kirchner assassination attempt, the broad front in Argentina, it's got its own issues, right? Argentina's a complicated place. It doesn't take much imagination to see Fernandez or Kirchner, whoever the candidate is, not win next year. And God forbid the right wing taking power in Argentina again, which would be very sad, right? But that aside, they have this 1 year period where all the players are in place to do some serious shit, right? And I'd be remiss. I mentioned there's going to be two elections next year. There's also a big one in Guatemala in spring, which will be that's a whole other conversation. Okay, Colombia. Two other big things that Petro has begun to do that I think are worth highlighting. Guys, one of the stories I sent you before this, I don't know if you guys checked it out. So you remember at the beginning of this year, the homie Matt from PI was on talking about how one of the things that Petro can do as president is enforce the granted bear or whatever, but the land reforms that are in the peace deal. Did you see whose shit just got fucking appropriated?
No.
One of the Castaño brothers, the founders of the paramilitaries. Yeah, there was a story that one of the Castaño brothers are known as the foulest motherfuckers in 1990s post 21st century Colombia. Right? These are some sick death squad leader fucks. Yeah. Right? These are really your archetypal death squad leaders. Right. There was a story that came out that Castaño, his like estate or his fucking ranch or whatever, they like seized it and like redistributed it to Campesinos. And Petro was there at the ceremony and he said something to the effect of, so this is just the first step. It's also about guaranteeing that this stays like this, right? That we don't have that cycle of, okay, now that the government moved in, now the death squads are coming in and kicking people out, right? It's important that the land reforms cannot be ignored.
So on that point of land reform, considering it's Latin America, what are the odds that Petro gets assassinated?
Dude, I think about it every day. And I know we've been talking about this, but like...
You said the magic words, land reform. So I'm like, ugh.
Dude, I'm shocked it hasn't happened yet. Like, but this is, once again, this is a critically important point. I think the only reason it hasn't happened is because of how popular he is. Like, he's already got a vice president who's arguably more badass than he is. Like, there's a deep bench in Colombia right now. Like, it's remarkable. And once again, obviously, like, things like... Who knows? Maybe the economy will crash and things will go bad. And oh my God, Petro's unpopular in like a month and everything gets reversed. Obviously that could happen, right? But I think it's still important to be talking about what's happening now. And once again, seeing what these people are building, because it really is something special. It really is something special. And the second thing that I wanted to bring up that Petro has begun to move on, though this has come with a little bit more of a battle, El Pacto. In the Congress has begun efforts to end compulsory military service. Dudes. Yeah. Oh shit. This is serious shit. This is it. If I recall correctly, it passed the Senate, but has had issues in the House. So this is another campaign promise that Petro was making for Paz Total, right? We're sending our kids to school, not to the fucking military, right? Shit like that. So like, this is, once again, this is evolving story. I have been very encouraged as somebody who, trying to learn from the mistakes of Castillo and Bortwright, went into this one a little bit more tepid, but have been very impressed, to say the least, with what I've seen so far. Like, because there was every reason to believe that Petro was going to govern toward Venezuela the way Boric has. There was every reason to believe that, right? Petro's rhetoric when he was campaigning was fuck Maduro, right? That was basically his rhetoric. The fact that he has said, no, we're making peace. And if we're making peace with every layer of our society, that means making peace with our brothers across this fucking border. This border, which is just a fucking line drawn, right?
It's funny because it's almost the opposite, how a lot of people, a lot of left parties run left in the elections and then moderate. He's gone almost the other way. Yeah, right? And I think on that point with Boric in Colombia as well, a lot of people, when we talk about disappointments with Boric in Chile, like a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, it's hard because Chile has its history and blah, blah, blah. But we're talking about Colombia here. Like it's because, I mean, we could talk about Chile and the coup and Pinochet, whatever, but that was in 1973. Colombia has been a client state for almost a century. You know what I mean? We're talking about 100 years of it being essentially the 51st state.
Dude, let's not forget. It was what? Remember, people forget. In, what was it, 2016 or like that year, there was three big votes globally that was like, oh my God, this is the worst year ever. Obviously, Trump, right? Brexit. And remember what the third one was?
Yeah.
The peace deal in Colombia. Right? Like, let's not forget Juan Manuel Santos, the moderate president before Iván Duque. He put the first peace deal to a referendum and it lost. Right? So, like, let's not, like it's not, we're not making some shit up as far as like Colombia being a very right wing society. You know, like, this is some crazy shit that we're seeing. And once again, I think his popularity translates to one simple thing. He can look every rich Colombian in the eye and say, you want the kidnappings to stop? I'm going to stop them, right? The poor Colombians, you want the killings to stop. I'm going to stop them, right? You cannot say you're going to stop the kidnappings if you're just going to, oh, yeah, let's just Mano Dura, you know, 5.0, whatever the fuck, right? Like, no, we tried that already, you know? So, like, no, it's amazing to see. Once again, this is something that will continue to develop, and I continue to be blown away. And I think next year there's going to be a huge opportunity, because at the end of the day, if a some sort of peace deal, like, and I mean like real peace deal, can be cut. In fact, I will, before we wrap up, I'm going to pose a question. You know, I love posing questions to you guys. Let's pose a prediction.
Man, here we go.
Within Petro's administration, do we get peace with every group? Which ones do we get peace with? Which ones do we not? ELN, Gulf Clan, Venezuela. Do we see peace with ELN? Does the civil war end? T.
I say yes. Actually, yeah. I think so. If he, you know, barring anything kind of extreme, anything could happen. Obviously, this is unprecedented. But you know, if things keep moving in the directions they are, I don't see why not. I mean, if they were able to negotiate a FARC treaty under right wing governments, I can't see how this would be. Well, maybe on the other hand, the one thing left wingers love to do most of all is to kill each other. So maybe because it's a progressive government, it won't work. But who knows? I think I lean towards yes.
Leroy.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with T, and I think 100% that it's going to be peace with Venezuela as well. I think that's going to be a very fruitful partnership, not only for the two countries, but for the whole region as well, because we're talking about two of the most important countries in the region. If they're on the same page, and then with Brazil, I think me being quite pessimistic and cynical, like naturally, I'm feeling very optimistic about everything here. How about you, Austin?
Guys, so I agree. But think about what we all just said. Think about that. This civil war has been going on for 70 years.
Yeah.
Longest running civil war in the hemisphere, right? This shit could literally end within the next 4 years. That's historic, right? Like, to say the very least. And I agree. I think, here's what I think. Okay, here's what I think. I think you'll get peace with the ELN, the National Liberation Army. I think it's going to happen. Gulf Clan is a wild card, right? I know there were people, and this is the right-wing paramilitaries, right? Like I said, Petro's already arrested a bunch of fucking Gulf Clan death squad members and shit like that. That's good to see. And I know the members of the leadership of the Gulf Clan came out after Petro got elected saying, no, we want peace too. So, hey, who the fuck knows? The Colombian Senate of the House approving Paz Total is important. But as far as Venezuela, right, I think there's just such a massive opportunity once again next year for a deal to be made between SELAC and Venezuela, which benefits everybody. Like you said, Leroy, it's that opportunity for Maduro to, if a deal gets put together, whether Maduro stands for re-election or not, he can leave with his head held high saying, hey, I made a lot of mistakes. It was a bumpy fucking ride, but hey, I leave Venezuela in one piece, right? Which I don't think that was on people's bingo cards a year ago, right? Or 2 years ago. So that's a big deal. And not just that, dude, if Petro and Lula can go back to their constituencies and say, look at what Duque and Bolsonaro did doing this Guaido bullshit. Who the fuck did that help, right? We went and talked Maduro straight up and we brought democracy back to Venezuela. Obviously, that's a bullshit sentence, but that's it. Once again, this shit writes itself. Anyways, wow, I will shut up now. God, it's good to be back. Go ahead,
Leroy. Yeah, and that's the way the arepa crumbles.
Okay. Right. That note, it's probably about time to wrap up. Shit.
Yeah, nah. Definitely. Again, like, and it's something I've always said. I think the way, however Brazil and Colombia goes, the region goes. So I think if everything that we're saying, if our hopes for everything that's going on, you know, comes to fruition, I think the region is going to be in a far better place and can get up on its own feet and move past its links to the north, to Canada, to the US, to Europe, whatever, and stand on the world stage as the proud people and region that it is, you know what I mean? And not just the backyard of some other fucking, you know, settler colony, you know what I mean? But we shall see. And we'll keep you posted, hopefully. But in saying that, thanks for tuning in. Again, if you support what we do and want more content, consider showing your solidarity on our Patreon, patreon.com/machetemate. That also gets you access to our Discord community. We used to have a book club, guys. We need to revive the book club because there's a lot of good things out there we could be reading sharing information and stuff like that. We've been kind of lax with that, but it's definitely something we're looking at getting back into. Yes, Austin.
Yes, book club, we're definitely going to have to bring back. Also, World Cup coming up, and we'll talk about that on the After Dark here in a moment. But, we're talking about maybe doing like a World Cup like Zoom party thing or whatever the fuck. If anybody be interested in that, let us know.
Yeah, 100%. That could be part of the little goodies. Anyway, head over to that. And if not, because we know times are tough, just show some love on wherever you listen to us. Comment, like, share, whatever. Share the link on Lord Elon's Twitter. Get the word out.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, hasta la victoria.
Peace.
Later, y'all.